Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And good morning, everybody. I'm Dan Zangrilli. Greetings as the sun is trying to push through the clouds. Hope you might be able to get outside on your porch for some morning coffee. You might be able to get into the garage and tinker on a project that you've been putting off, well, for a long, long time. That's kind of what we have to keep us occupied as we do our part to stop the spread and flatten the curve amidst this this crazy time that we're all together having to endure. And we do remind you, and please be mindful of yourself, your family, and others, and stay informed, stay up to date. We're doing our part to give you all the latest information, not only on the national scale, but the local scale throughout the course of our listening area, and that is with America's first radio station celebrating its centennial this year, where it all started on the AM side of your radio, News Radio 1020 KDKA. So for all of the latest news, you can turn to the 50,000-watt flamethrower at KDKA Radio. And, of course, if you have the HD radio in your car, it's a terrific feature. I suggest that you learn how to use it, because what you can do is you can just bounce back and forth from this signal to that signal to get the latest information on the 93.7 The Fan HD2 channel. But the easiest way, and I think did a pretty good job of training myself how to use my smart speaker. I have the Alexa, and it's just terrific. Having a morning cup of coffee, and you just say Alexa or whomever it is, whether it's a Google device, play News Radio 1020 KDKA. You can do that with Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Many of you probably are, or listening on the radio.com app. Nonetheless, we greet you, and we are appreciative that you join us here on a Sunday morning. And it's another day. What is this, day 15 of the new normal? And what we continue to do is discuss and hope for sport to return at some juncture. And in the meantime, what we can do is we can, A, reminisce, which we've done, and we did yesterday on the show, and hope you enjoyed that one, because we're going to do a little bit of the same thing, but with a different twist, coming up today. Had Jason Grilli on yesterday. Really enjoyed the conversation with the former Pirates closer, with the 2013 wild card game being replayed on television this past week. We're going to do the same on radio here this week on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Looking forward to hearing the call with Greg Brown and Bob Walk. Well, A.J. Burnett is going to stop by the program coming up a little bit later on at 10:40. We have A.J. scheduled from his home just outside Baltimore. Check in on him, see what he's doing. What I did, and I was really surprised at the overwhelming response, and I don't know if this is driven by emotion or it's just the fact that not only can you prove it anecdotally, but you might be able to even quantify his contributions as being true. I asked a simple question on Twitter with AJ's appearance on the show today. Late last night, I posted on Twitter, and if you'd like to vote, you can follow me, at Dan Zangrilli. Simple question. Is A.J. Burnett the most important pitcher that the Pirates have had since Doug Graybeck? Think about that. And I did last night. You know, you can make an argument, and some people did, for Francisco Liriano pitching that 2013 wild card game. Gerrit Cole, obviously, a 19-game winner in 2015. But when you look at the overall contribution, the impact, and the difference made, and if you lined all three pitchers up beside one another, A.J. Burnett, most important Pirates pitcher since Doug Graybeck. Agree? Disagree? Well, so far, nearly 1,800 votes have come in, and this is clearly unscientific, but 89% say that, yes, A.J. Burnett is the most important Pirates pitcher since Doug Graybeck, of course, the Cy Young winner in 1992. Only 11% disagreed. Interesting. That poll is going to be up for about another hour or so at Dan Zangrilli if you want to go ahead and vote, or if you want to leave a comment, you can obviously disagree and make a case for somebody else. So, and important, okay, so that's somebody on Twitter, battling underscore Buck said, important is too vague to really answer this question. In my mind, the three pitchers that they took number one overall were far more important, even if two of them weren't that successful. When he says three, number one overall, I'm assuming Cole Tyone. I mean, there are there are a number of other pitchers that that were taken one overall. Maybe he's assuming Chris Benson, I guess, back in 96. But anyway, important. The very definition of the word, of great significance or value, likely to have a profound effect on success, survival, or well-being. Again, that's A.J. Burnett, right? In the last 30 years, he's the most important Pirates pitcher that they've had, right? Make an argument otherwise on the Twitter thread where that poll is up. But 89% of Pittsburghers, or those that voted in the poll, said that A.J. Burnett is indeed the most important Pirates pitcher since Doug Drabeck. So looking forward to chatting with Batman. That's at 10:40. Jack Zarenzik, my broadcast partner on the pre- and post-game shows. This would be, gosh, what, year five, I think, of he and I working together? Maybe, what, year four? I did take, a sabbatical for a couple of years. But anyway, Jay-Z's coming by. I talked to Jack yesterday, and if you have, many of you have had an opportunity to come by and talk to Jack when we're sitting outside the ballpark before Pirates games on Federal Street. One of the most affable guys that I've ever been around in my broadcast career or my career in baseball. And anytime you get Jack on the phone, the conversation is always entertaining, enlightening. We covered a number of topics from cuisine to what's going on here in the COVID-19 pandemic. His stepdaughter, a nurse. His wife, a nurse. They're salt-of-the-earth people, but we also discussed kind of the state of the game, and I want to get his take on how he would handle this as a former general manager of a major league club for nearly a decade. How would you go about this? What are some of the biggest challenges? And his background is primarily in scouting, development, with everything that's been going on, and we just talked about it in the 2020 update. Scott Boras doesn't like the idea of what Major League Baseball and the Players Association did with this draft, essentially limiting it to five rounds, if they have it, coming up in July in 2021. Opportunity for it to be just 20 rounds. Some of the ramifications there. We discussed it yesterday, trickle down on minor league baseball. I want to get Jack's take because I was talking to him about it on the phone, and that's something that I think needs to be on air because his perspectives are just that darn good. So want to also ask you another question. We're not just going to stick to baseball today. That's obviously what we usually do when I'm on the air for obvious reasons, but I'm a big Sports Business Journal fan, and I suggest you pick it up, especially amidst this crisis, because it really allows you to keep your finger on the pulse as to truly the ramifications that coronavirus is going to have on the sport. And as you read and as the numbers start to trickle in, as we're able to start quantifying damages, it could really paint a dark picture as far as the health of the sport, which will essentially change the complexion of the sport and maybe how we consume it, be it in person or online, whether that's, you know, subscription-based content as we push further and further to streaming, how does the fan experience change, and what are you actually able to do when your teams are less flush with cash from a fan experience standpoint, from a player personnel standpoint, from a development standpoint. All of this is going to have a domino effect that is going to be, I think, depending on how long the virus is, naturally, a lasting impact for years. So I asked on Twitter about esports, right? And I feel like just an old head talking about this, and I'm not that old, and I should know more about it, but I don't. An article in the Sports Business Journal, one of a couple that I want to talk about today, are you turning to esports, and is this something that is going to explode the longer that we don't have real sport? Interesting. Twitter poll at Dan Zangerle as well. Yes, no, what are esports? It's okay to answer either way, especially if you are in the sector that does want to go the esports route. I'm curious as to what you're going to, why obviously you're going to it. It's a great alternative. But it's exploding. I know enough about esports just to know that it's a big deal, that it's exploding. Some colleges are trying to figure out what to do with it. Do they embrace it? Some have been as progressive as trying to consider it a varsity sport. Those are some of the conversations that are being kicked around, I think, at the collegiate level. Do we start offering scholarships? Because, listen, it's a big money industry. And that's something that I want to at least get the conversation started. We might go down that rabbit hole if it's not today, but maybe in subsequent weeks, because, hey, look, this is really the time that the sporting world, I think, is shifting, gravitating to a digital space because we are forced to go there in a big way. I know I'm doing quite a bit of that with my job down in West Virginia as their broadcast director because, listen, what do we have to turn to? We're all penned up, and we have to practice our social distancing. So this might be the tectonic shift where, you know, as we shift a percentage year by year by year slowly from terrestrial to digital, that the pendulum really swings that way. And is this the time where esports just takes the bull by the horns and grabs a significant market share where the culture of sport and esports changes? But what I do want to get into coming up next, that is on the college front, and I'm going to ask Michael Smith, who's a longtime reporter for the Sports Business Journal. He's based out of Charlotte, but what he did is he wrote an article with some good information in it, and I want to get that to you, how major colleges brace for revenue adjustments and really the conferences. So this is relevant to anybody that follows any of the big three in this area, whether it is West Virginia, whether it is Penn State, whether it is Pitt, ACC, Big 12, and the Big Ten, you know, all of the conferences are taking it in the teeth right now, as every sport is. And Michael Smith is the college business writer for the Sports Business Journal. He's been doing it for over 15 years. And now, a few weeks in the aftermath of conference basketball tournaments being canceled, we are able to kind of put numbers on things, and we are able to estimate with not exact razor precision, but you can get it into a ballpark. I was on a conference call with Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby. He said all in at this juncture, $15 to $18 million at this juncture after 2 weeks. Big 12 conference tournament, they pulled the plug on that out in Kansas City, $6.5 million right off the top. And $15 to $18 million, that's obviously going to come out of distributions to the schools, which, you know, 10 schools in that league, you're seeing almost $2 million per hit. So what does that mean? And, of course, the longer that we go, I mean, heck, if the football domino falls, ho, look out. So let's try to get a grasp on that from Michael Smith from Sports Business Journal. And don't forget to answer the esports question on my Twitter timeline, if you would be so kind. And, of course, A.J. Burnett question as well. Is he the most important Pirates pitcher since 1992. He's going to join us coming up a little bit later on. Hope you enjoy the show, everybody. I'm Dan Zang, really broadcasting from, my home office, if you want to call it that. I have a live studio audience as well. Really, really fired up for two doves that literally just came up in front of my window. I posted a picture of that. So we're going to try to keep them captivated, you as well, on this Sunday morning across Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Hey, folks, all of us here at 93.7 The Fan doing our part to help all of you stay connected. Radio.com, you can log on or you could just download the app, and shame on you if you haven't gotten it just yet. It's really terrific and improving by the day. What we're doing right now is trying to help you stay connected during this stay-at-home time. Radio.com/stayconnected. Dan Zangrilli with you. Thanks for spending Sunday morning with us, and I think it's going to be another really nice day out, even though it's a little wet. If you're out on a morning walk just trying to stretch the legs, get some exercise, please do so responsibly, whether you're, again, working on the garage. I'm sure the list is growing, and maybe you're having an opportunity, like I am, to check a box or two off of it to try to work on this or that, the projects that just pile up. This is, I guess, the time to do it as we practice our social distancing. Want to get to this hour a lot about the business side of what major colleges could brace as far as revenue adjustments, and also was just passed along a great article, a press release from Point Park University. I asked the question about esports in the first segment. Might want to revisit that a little bit, have a Twitter poll up as to whether or not I'm asking you're into esports, you know what they are you turning to esports, because there was a great article about that in the Sports Business Journal. But right next to that was some hard facts and figures, or at least the projections of them, from Michael Smith, who's based out of Charlotte for about 15 years. He's been the college guy for Sports Business Journal, and he joins us here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan to talk about how big of a blow this is going to be. Michael, good morning. I hope you and yours are safe amidst probably the craziest time, I think, that many of us in the sports industry have endured in our career.
Yeah, I can definitely identify with your desire to get some projects knocked out around the house. In fact, that probably is a better option for me than what my wife is doing, which is trying to put together a jigsaw puzzle. So,
I'm sure she also has a list for you in her back pocket that is probably quite extensive, as my wife
is ever present.
Yeah, no excuses now. There's no games to watch because, honey, watching sports is my job. Now we don't have that. We can only watch old sports. Anyway, Michael, the numbers are starting to kind of come in as to what this could mean, at least early projections as far as the hit in the wallet that college sports, not just football or any other sport, is going to have to endure. How big is this going to get? How bad can this get? How big and bad is it right now?
Well, a couple days ago, we saw the first evidence of that with the NCAA's revenue distribution to the schools in Division I, and that revenue was cut by about 63% versus what was expected. And so that's going to be a big blow. That's going to mean millions of dollars in lost revenue from March Madness, which is obviously what generates most of the NCAA's revenue. So that's going to be a real hit, and probably as much or more so for the schools outside the Power Five as much as the bigger schools inside the Power Five.
So March Madness, can you put a price tag on that?
Well, the estimates that I've seen are that CBS and Turner, which have the rights for March Madness, the rights fee that they would ordinarily be paying this year to the NCAA is around $870 million, and so those negotiations are ongoing between the NCAA and Turner. But based on moving forward without that revenue, the NCAA went ahead and made that revenue distribution. But that's a lot of money to take out of the system, like I said, especially for basketball schools that depend heavily on those units from the NCAA tournament.
Michael Smith, Sports Business Journal. He covers college sports for the SBJ. You wrote that this could take as long as 3 years to fully realize the financial effects of the COVID-19 virus. Michael, is that to this point, or is that maybe what you project once we get through COVID-19?
That was a projection by the athletic director at Cal Berkeley, who said that he was worried that it could take as long as 3 years to know the ultimate effects of this. And so much of this hinges on football season. You know, football is the main driver of revenue, as we all know. And without the revenue from football season, it could lead to some really tough decision making on staff layoffs, spending on facilities, and of course the Olympic sports, which could be under threat if that revenue dries up. I've even heard some people suggest that maybe this could prompt the NCAA to look at their minimum of 14 sports, and maybe it gets lowered to 10 or 12. So there's lots of ramifications that are being contemplated now. What you see are athletic directors like Heather Like and Sandy Barber are going through different modeling to see if we lose 10% of our revenue, what does that mean? If we lose 20% of our revenue, what does that mean? How do we react? And, you know, it's all speculative because, first and foremost, we hope the containment efforts work. We hope that we're able to flatten the curve and emerge from the pandemic in the coming months. And, you know, that everyone, of course, wants to get back to normal, but you have to prepare for the, what's not normal.
Michael Smith, Sports Business Journal, is with us talking about the impact of COVID-19, what we've already seen on college sports, and what could potentially be coming here. Well, you mentioned some of the models as athletic directors try to brace for this. In your article, I guess you spoke to Joe Castiglione, the athletic director at the University of Oklahoma, one of the programs that are probably most solvent and flush with cash in the country. They're calculating models, Michael, to take it even a step further, according to your article, 35% to 50%.
Right. He's trying to be prepared for whatever scenario is presented at Oklahoma. And so that if that means a 10% reduction in revenue, that's one thing. He's also looking at 35% and 50%. If you consider no March Madness and you consider perhaps no football this fall, then those are some pretty drastic revenue numbers, like we said, to take it out of the system and for schools to have to adjust to.
And you look at this time of year, Michael, you mentioned that this is a vital time for athletic departments because this is season ticket selling renewal period for football, donations, right? They usually are kind of coming in at this time, and, you know, corporations and everybody else, just the trickle-down of the economy. I mean, if you're going to be laying people off, it's going to be hard to justify to cut a check to a university or renew your suite or your 20-season tickets on the club level. There's ramifications there as well that I don't think that we're necessarily taking into consideration.
Right. I mean, you know, outside of TV revenue, you're really talking about this time of year providing the lifeblood for a lot of athletic departments, especially that rely on football. So there's the season ticket sales season that's going on right now. Typically that would be finished by the end of March. A lot of schools are extending to the end of April the ability for season ticket holders to renew their tickets and to make their donations for the year. And as we all know, the donations determine how good your seats are and where your parking is for most schools. So that's, like I said, that's the lifeblood of athletic departments is the revenue numbers that they're going to have for the year. You know, the foundation for that is being set right now. And so if you're a school that had significant momentum and you were ahead of the game sales-wise, you've probably hit some headwinds that have knocked you back at this point.
Michael Smith, Sports Business Journal with us, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan, major colleges embracing for revenue adjustments. All sports are. But, Michael, are colleges maybe worse off than the pro level? I mean, amongst your colleagues, and I'm sure you have conference calls or you chat amongst each other, because with Sports Business Journal, you have different writers covering different sectors of the sport. Do we have any idea as to what sport financially is going to be impacted more than another, or is it just kind of an across-the-board hammering? that everybody's undertaking?
Well, I think as far as the projections that, that colleges are looking at right now, it's pretty much an across-the-board type of thing. I mean, you could certainly look at it from the standpoint of, you know, sports that, that could be vulnerable at this stage. But you also look at these athletic departments are huge, huge operations. You know, the athletic department at Texas A&M has 350 employees. These are good-sized businesses. And so, you know, honestly, they've been living the good life here for the last decade or so. You know, times have been good. Donations have been on the increase for the most part. You know, coaches are getting paid. Facilities are getting built. It's been a great decade for college athletics, you know, during that time. And so, you know, trying to project how these schools will react, you got to wonder if the people part of the equation is maybe going to take a hit, because if you have an athletic department with 15 employees who work on nutrition for the athletes, or you know, one of those departments where they've really grown, you know, maybe strength and conditioning, training room, all these areas where the number of employees have grown pretty greatly over the last decade or so, those could be some areas that get hit with some cuts.
Michael Smith, Sports Business Journal, talking about the impact COVID-19 has had financially already and could have on college sports. You make a good point there, Michael, and you dropped the term facilities. You know, it seems to me over the last 2 to 3 years, there has just been an absolute explosion in trying to keep up with the facilities arms race. And as this thing strikes, there's a lot of schools out there with shovels in the ground as we speak, buildings half taken down, renovations undergoing. I know in this region, there's a number of campaigns to improve all of the facilities. Some of that, literally, they have backhoes on campus and cranes in the air right now. I wonder what kind of impact midway through a project this is going to have.
Well, the first thing you think about is the ability to be able to pay for the project. And so much of what we see is the renovation to the stadium, like what Penn State's going to be confronting here in the next couple of years with a humongous renovation of its stadium. You know, so many of the larger schools operate on the donations provided by their boosters. And, you know, a lot of those donations are pledges. And so, you know, once they've gone out and raised that money, it's almost like the athletic directors are going to have to go back out and re-raise that money if they're dealing with donors who maybe are not in as good a financial shape as they were a month ago. So that's a critical component of the job that it's something they're going to have to continue to reinforce, because if a donor has lost, you know, 35% of a stock portfolio, the generosity to the college may not be quite what it was before.
Michael, have you talked to anybody, and have they given you an idea of if we can overcome this, and basically what college sports will look like after this, or is this potentially going to be a death knell as to college sports as we know it today? Will it look drastically different on the other side?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, I don't know the answer. You know, if we're able, you know, like I said, if the containment aspect of this works and we're able to come out of this by, you know, the end of May, even in June, and schools or football programs are able to get back on the practice field and get ready for a normal season with practice in August and a season that starts in September, that's what everyone wants. That's what everyone hopes for. If not, you know, if if the football revenue doesn't come through and we're, you know, we have a shortened season or we have a season with no fans in the stands, things like that, that, that would certainly chip away from the revenue piece of it. You know, what could happen? You know, we hinted at this a little bit before, but could there be fewer Olympic sports than what we have now? Could travel go back from charter travel to, commercial travel?
Yeah.
Things like that where schools have really, really benefited and athletes have benefited from those travel arrangements, but maybe the schools can't spend quite as much money doing that. You know, the other thing that's happened during this past decade, of course, is that conferences have gotten a lot bigger and a lot more spread out. So you don't have just have the football and basketball teams traveling across the country. You have, say in the American Athletic Conference, you have volleyball teams, soccer teams that are traveling from the Mid-Atlantic all the way through Texas. Will they be able to keep up that kind of travel schedule?
Yeah, I work in West Virginia, and it's crazy, Michael. You know, you go from Morgantown, West Virginia, to Lubbock, Texas, and I'm based out of Pittsburgh. So it's going to be amazing to see how this all falls out and what it means on the other side and how the sport looks on the other side. Well, Michael, if it's okay with you, I really enjoyed the conversation and the insight that you provided, and I'll urge all of you listening out there to read his stuff in the Sports Business Journal, especially if you are a big college sports fan, because your work right now, I would assume, Michael, is about as well-read and significant as it's ever been in your career. You guys are going to have a lot of eyeballs on you, I presume.
Well, I'd be hard-pressed to tell you the last story that I wrote that didn't include some reference to the pandemic and the impact of it on college sports. And we'd all like to be covering something else, but this is what we've got, and this is, certainly, how we want to best communicate with, the impact with our readers.
Yeah. Well, keep up the good work. Keep up the extremely important work, Michael Smith. Let's do it again soon.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and we enjoyed you coming on, and we're definitely going to do it again because I would imagine there's going to be a lot more twists and turns to the story as time goes on. That's Michael Smith, Sports Business Journal. Read his stuff. He did a terrific write-up on exactly what colleges are bracing for as it pertains to revenue adjustments. As I open up my Sports Business Journal, on the other side, it's a question that I asked earlier in the program. Are you going to fill the void? The esports take stock of an opportunity, and I was just passed along a great note from Point Park University that I want to get to next. We'll tell you about it when we return. I'm Dan Zhang. Really, next hour, A.J. Burnett, former Pirates right-hander and Bucko legend, will join us as well, plus Jack Zarenzik at the top of the hour. Thanks for joining us here across Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Under an hour away from A.J. Burnett joining us here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Looking forward to chatting with the former Bucko right-hander. And according to all of you who have answered a Twitter poll, at Dan Zhang, really on Twitter, that you believe that he is the most important Pirates pitcher to throw for the Pirates since Doug Drabek. Overwhelmingly. Essentially 89% of the vote. You can also text your answer if you'd like on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line at 928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. Special thanks to Michael Smith. Last segment, really enjoyed that chat with the Sports Business Journal college expert. Major colleges bracing for these revenue adjustments. If the football domino falls, goodness, I mean, what is that going to mean? I mean, there's estimations at this juncture, and, like, think about it. We are relatively early in this stage as to the full race of what we face as a nation, as a society, and as a sports industry with COVID-19. California Berkeley AD Jim Nolson in the Sports Business Journal article saying that it could take as long as 3 years to fully realize the financial effects of the COVID-19 virus. So you get a football domino falling, that's, as Michael mentioned, the trimming of Olympic sports. So, listen, you've got a kid right now playing college soccer. You've raised a pretty decent golfer. You've really invested in tennis. That could go by the wayside. Heck, something even as costly as baseball, right? I mean, that is an extremely expensive sport when you start discussing ballpark maintenance and traveling the roster sizes to all of the conference games. It's really insane. And now donations are starting to dry up. I know a lot of colleges right now, I mean, if they don't have a crane erected or a bulldozer on campus to try to improve a facility and keep up with the Joneses, they are, well, behind and antiquated. And I think there isn't a college, major college, in a Power Five institution that does not have some sort of construction project in the works, whether actively with half a building torn down or a massive crater on their campus to build something, or at least an initiative to get something off the ground. Boy, it's going to be catastrophic here, potentially. And we may be just a month or two away. And I know probably all of you are saying, listen, there's bigger fish to fry. Yes, there certainly are, as to what our nation is facing. But, you know, I was watching the 60 Minutes episode with a financial guru. I DVR'd it, caught up on it yesterday. And, man, it is sobering now that we're starting to quantify the damages. I think the American economy might be able to, and listen, I'm no economist here or expert on this, but based on just the little that I've read, and I don't want to pass on misinformation here, but I think that the economy and the strength of it overall should be able to respond. But as it pertains to sport, boy, the tentacles of this being embedded are, I think, far more devastating than maybe some other sectors of the economy, as we talk about time and the pliability, the ability to recover. Anyway, I want to revisit the esports topic that I kind of tossed out there that I do want to now, and I'm going to fully commit to this next weekend. I want to discuss Twitter poll at Dan Zangrilli. Are you into esports? Yes. No. Huh? Esports. What are they? Those are essentially the three topics that I threw out less than an hour ago on my Twitter handle. 65% are saying no, not into esports. 15% are, 20% really don't know. And that's a really, really tiny sample size. You've got about 23 hours left to vote on it. 87%. Basically, are you tuning in or turning to esports amidst the coronavirus outbreak? If you'd be so kind, explain what and why. Well, I was passed along an article, and special thanks to Kevin Taylor, who's the Sports Information Director, Athletic Communications at Point Park University. And little did I know, I did make mention of this briefly in passing based on some of the things that I've just been hearing working in the college space, that esports are becoming a thing at these universities, and there's a lot of real discussion as to whether or not you add this as a varsity sport and start offering scholarships to esports. Well, Point Park University, 3 weeks ago, this month, they hired an esports head coach. I didn't even know that they had a program, but they do. You can be part of the Pioneers esports team. Chris Gall, we've got to get him on the program, has been hired as the head coach of the Pioneers' new varsity esports program. He's also going to work in compliance for the athletic department, but nevertheless, again, this is fascinating, and while we wait for the real stuff to resume, I mean, there's nothing stopping 5 to 10 of you starting an esports tournament or league. A lot of this stuff is just blossomed, and it's printing money to live facilities, and those have been directly and drastically affected by the COVID-19 outbreak because it is, again, a mass gathering. But to be able to sit in the confines of your home and to be able to, fire a system up and start a league, start a team, I know that, and I sound like a relic or a fossil talking about this, and I'm probably, my lingo and verbiage is one of that, it sounds like somebody that knows very little about this, which I do, know very little about this, but it's interesting, and is there going to be a hockey stick type of spike here that we see in this sector, and is this the alternative, and will this eventually, you know, transition to being more mainstream? Something that I think we certainly want to pop the hood on, and we'll do that next week. I'm going to try to reach out to Kevin and talk to Chris Gall more about the industry, because, again, I know very little about it, and how these work on campus and how you can earn scholarships, et cetera, et cetera. Thanks for joining us. Hour number one is in the books. Dan Zangrilli with you here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. 93.7 The Fan on Twitter. Follow us there. Thanks to our friends at Jim Shorkey Kia, Pittsburgh's number one Kia dealer. So next up, Jack Zarenczyk, the former GM, my broadcast partner, will shift more into the baseball side of things, get his take on everything that is happening. If he were presiding over a big league ball club as he did for nearly a decade, how would he be handling this? What are his thoughts on the state of this whole thing and the short and long-term ramifications? I want to get his thoughts on all of that. And did he watch Tiger King like I told him to? That's going to be discussed for sure here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.